Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby and every week I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the team of the EV Cafe, and this week is no exception. I've got the lovely John Curtis. John, good morning and welcome.
Hello, how are you, my friend?
I am well, and I'm very well because we get to talk to all the innovators, pioneers, and collaborators in our industry. And today, no exception. We've got the wonderful Adam Hall from Drax Energy Services and Drax Electric Vehicles, and all of that mushed together, which we're going to hear about today. Because as his sign says behind him, for all those that that are watching, the energy experts. So, Adam, welcome.
Good morning. Really nice to be here with you.
Well, we'll soon change that. No, Adam, very, very, very big welcome to you. Drax are a wonderful sponsor of the EV Cafe, and that's been going on for a little while now. So we're getting to know you guys a little bit. But for those of you, for those of us that have not heard too much about Drax and who they are and what they do, why don't you give us a little introduction to them?
Yeah, of course. I'd be really pleased to. So Drax Electric Vehicles sits within what we call our energy services function. And that function forms part of our retail business, which is called Drax Energy Solutions. For those of you that have been in the market for some time, you may know of us as Haven Power, but we rebranded that a little while ago to bring it in line with the wider group. Our retail business is actually the third largest provider of electricity to the industrial and commercial sectors here in the UK. But we're also developing products and services to help support our corporate customers navigate to, you know, a net zero future. So with regards to EV specifically, we actually provide a full turnkey product for our customers, and that's designed to really support them through every step of the electrification journey, whether that be through vehicle suitability assessments, so helping them understand which vehicles are right to transition to electric, right the way through to long-term charge point operation and maintenance contracts. So as you've already mentioned, as we've got written behind us, as an energy company, we like to see ourselves as experts in understanding customers' energy usage and also their energy estate. And through delivering those really well thought through EV solutions, we really look to maximise the benefits that can be generated through things like smart charging. And in the future, really look to maximise things like vehicle to grid or flexibility type applications.
But man, I love that sort of future piece, and we can perhaps come on to that in a little bit. But Adam, why are you working for Drax and pushing this alternative way of creating energy and helping the EV market? But what makes you care about this sector? Because, you know, there must be some affinity with what you're doing, I think.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, to be completely honest with you, early in my career, I'm not sure I chose my path in a particularly scientific way. I did accountancy and management at university. Seemed like a pretty good idea. I was good with numbers, good with maths. Accountants always seemed to be in demand. So I thought, let's do that, get a ready-made job at the end of it. But I think probably the first time I really thought about my career was when I qualified as a chartered accountant, and I knew I wanted to move away from accountancy into industry and actually start working for a business. And actually, I think that's where my experience as an auditor really was invaluable. Working for many different businesses across numbers of different sectors was really powerful. And it gave me an opportunity to really work out where I wanted to work. And then also at that time, I think it's fair to say, as a society, we were becoming more and more conscious of the climate crisis. And I really did want to work for an organization that operated in a sector that I thought could make a real difference to, you know, our ambitions to become net zero. And really, Drax Group was the perfect fit for me. At the time I joined, back in 2010, believe it or not, nearly 14 years ago, They'd just started embarking on what would become Europe's largest decarbonisation project, transitioning from coal fire in Yorkshire to sustainable biomass. And to be honest with you, I was desperate to join a really purpose-led organisation.
That's amazing. I love that, purpose-led organisation.
Because that's the bit that's not understood, Adam, about Drax. For those who do know, there's this immediate assumption that fossil fuels are the way that you go and that you're just chucking out any old energy and making shed loads of money. And actually, you're a values-driven business that is increasingly delivering more and more renewables into the sector.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think you only need to look back at our history and see the track record of that transition from coal to sustainable biomass to see what a difference we've made. I think for us, we're really excited about a new technology we're pioneering called bioenergy carbon capture and storage. I think it's well known that, as you know, we use the offcuts from the forestry industry to pelletize and then create renewable electricity. But where we're going in the future is actually not only do we capture that carbon as the organic material is growing, but also capture it as we combust it to create electricity. The opportunity to create a negative emission society is hugely exciting, and Drax sit at the forefront of that.
And that's something which you take into your own life? I mean, as a human being, sustainability is important to you?
Yeah, massively important to me, I think. And, you know, probably the most obvious thing is making a conscious decision to switch to an electric vehicle like your good selves. I think I've been driving EVs now for nearly a decade. And I've got to say, it didn't used to be as easy as it is now. You know, we're in a wonderful age of electric vehicles where I don't have to think when I get in my car. But wider than that, unfortunately, my house is unsuitable for solar. Despite getting four different solar engineers around, I've been told that's absolutely not suitable. So I do try to source my power renewably, as you'd expect, and really limit the amount of gas I use. And other than that, I guess I'm like most people, really. I recycle as much as I can. I collect rainwater to water the garden in the summer, and I compost as much as I can. And I think, you know, although there's always more we can do, I think it's really important that we do what we can. And for me, teaching my children, Isaac and Eva, about how precious our resources are is a massive part about how we kind of educate the next generation.
Wait a minute, Eva, E-V-A?
I know, my wife would kill me, but yeah.
Love that.
It wasn't on purpose, I promise.
But it's great, because it always strikes me, because we don't all come the same route, right? You know, through life and school and family and all of that sort of stuff. What sort of set these things in motion? Was it your early life in school and, you know, kind of a sensitivity to the wider world? Was it family, parents, or is it something that you've grown into? How was school for you, and how did it sort of come into what you're doing today?
I think it's quite interesting. I think I would be lying if I said to you, you know, I always had sustainability at the core of everything I did. And, you know, I went through school thinking this is absolutely what I want to do. I went through school probably as a stereotypical rugby player. I liked my sport. I did a lot of sport. School took a bit of a back burner. But I think it's a bit of a cliche response, but I think my family have and always will be kind of my biggest influence on how I live my life. I've been really fortunate to be surrounded by, you know, family members who have worked incredibly hard all their lives, whether that be my parents when I was growing up or my wife now, who's trying to juggle looking after a 6 and 7 year old whilst building a fledgling business. So I think hard work has always been central to what I do. But also having, I guess, the courage to make a change when you feel like it's the right time to. As I already mentioned, I worked in the finance team here at Drax for about 4 years. And after that, I felt it was time to do something a little bit more strategic and a little bit forward looking. And it was at that time I really started to assess where I wanted to put my time and energy. And for the last you know, 6 or 7 years, I've really focused on helping our customers decarbonize their operations, really understand the impact of their operations on the climate, and help them make real demonstrable change to make a difference. And I've got to say, I mean, I mentioned being purpose-driven here at Drax. I think having a career where you are purpose-driven is so important to get you out of bed every day.
Mm. How much do you think, or how much do you find that businesses are looking to decarbonise? We talk about this an awful lot in our bubble, but in the real business world, we've got economic challenges, we've got commercial challenges. It is tough to make the right call because very often it's perceived that there's an increased cost. Are people battering your door down saying, help us to become more sustainable?
I think that's a really good question. And I think that's actually changed kind of over the last 3 or 4 years. I think probably prior to COVID, we were seeing, you know, a real appetite from our business customers to do the right thing, you know, make demonstrable change and reduce carbon. I think for all the right reasons that you've already mentioned, John, you know, economic climate, and all the difficulties that came alongside the pandemic and working from home, you know, I think it was right that we saw businesses look to safeguard their operations and perhaps turn away from other projects such as transitioning to electric vehicles. I think that is firmly back on the agenda. I think we are seeing customers coming to us more and more, not only because of the required improvements in sustainability, but also because that notion of it costing more is starting to reverse. You know, at Drax, we really do see decarbonisation as giving businesses another asset to create value streams from. You know, we quite often talk about electric vehicles as these batteries on wheels. You know, how do you maximise the value of that battery in an electric vehicle to provide flexibility and stability to the grid? So for us, we're working with customers to actually see it as a bit of a no-brainer, something that's right for both the economy, but also right for the environment. And when you've got that kind of win-win situation, it becomes a very easy discussion with the customer.
Yeah, I mean, talk to us about this potential win-win. We've sort of alluded to it back at the beginning, and I mentioned that I particularly like the idea of vehicle to grid and using the vehicles as batteries and all of that kind of stuff, that smart grid kind of approach to, because we you know, I was thinking, shall I ask him, What is the biggest challenge? Well, often people say it's power, or at least it's one of them. Talk to us a little bit about these future things. Help us understand what's coming down the pipeline and how that might help us, like vehicle to grid and things like that.
Yeah, so for Drax as a power company and a partner to these businesses, I do think V2G or even V1G, so using just smart charging technology to be more sensible about when you charge an electric vehicle is really powerful. I think for me, whilst I can be excited about that, that's something that the likes of us three have talked about in the industry for probably nearly 10 years now. And whilst we still see the number of V2G compatible cars being so limited, we've also got some way to go to make sure that the cost of that charger is not so high that it limits the commercial opportunities. But that being said, I think it's an absolute imperative for our energy system. You know, you only need to look at studies, National Grid's future energy scenarios, for example, that basically say as we continue to deploy more and more of this intermittent renewable generation like wind and solar, we absolutely need flexibility and stability. And when you've got 38 million batteries running around the UK roads sitting idle for good chunks of time, that gives us a massive opportunity to help stabilise the grid, but also maximise the use of the intermittent renewables on the network. So when we talk about win-win, create value for the customer, create flexibility for the grid, and maximise renewable generation, it's a fantastic opportunity that we have here in the UK, and it feels like we're on the cusp of it.
Do you think that is a potential reality? Because a lot of people would say this is pie in the sky. This isn't, you know, the grid's going to fall over. The, you know, how can we get, we can barely get a charge started, let alone, you know, start working out which way it's supposed to go. And the vehicles, the batteries are going to die and not last long enough. What is it real? Is it possible?
Yes, I really do think it is. I think first and foremost, I think we will have enough electricity to power this, you know, new decarbonized industry. I think you've got the likes of Drax that stands ready to provide that flexibility to the system when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. So categorically, yes, I think the network can cope. It's not necessarily a question of power. It's a question of when we use that power. And when we've got lots and lots of renewable generation, we should be charging our vehicles as much as we can. And when we don't have lots and lots of renewable generation, then we should be using different processes to make sure we're not taking demand, you know, when we need it. I think with regards to batteries, I think that's probably one of the biggest myths that we're seeing in the market at the moment. I think people think these batteries last about 3 years and then need full replacement. And, you know, I mean, look at the EV rally, driving around the Tesla with, you know, many thousand miles on the clock. Mm. You know, I drove an EV, you know, for probably over 3 years, 100,000 miles, and I saw less than 1% degradation on the battery. So I think we've got a real part to play in the industry to talk to people about how good this technology is. And then for me, from a kind of V2G perspective, I think it all comes down to commercials. You know, if I sit here and say I can create you a few hundred pounds a year for us to utilize your battery, I think that's a very compelling proposition to a driver.
Yeah, and we've seen that. I think there's been some tests, and that's the kind of numbers. You know, just giving people a few hundred pounds back every year makes headway. And I'm very glad that you had a very comprehensive answer to my risky question. But I had every faith in you, Adam. John.
I've heard a number of people over the last few weeks saying, oh yeah, cars, electric cars, done. The transition is happening and we don't need to worry about it anymore. Is that your view?
I would say yes and no. I think...
Hop off the fence.
Okay.
You're going to get some splinters then... there, mate. That's the...
Okay. I'll do better. Right, I'm going to go with yes. I think we are pretty much there. I think... there's always a reason for somebody to give a reason why they can't or shouldn't jump into an EV. You know, how many times do we hear from people who won't go electric because they feel it's going to inconvenience them on their, you know, annual trip to Scotland when they're going to tow a trailer behind? So I think there's always reasons why. You know, are electric vehicles absolutely perfect? No, they're not. But as I said at the start, having driven them for nearly a decade, I can honestly say to you now, I never jump into my car and feel nervous about range, where I'm going to get a charge, how much it's going to cost me, how I'm going to pay for that, you know, charging session. So it feels like we're in a really good place. And then when you lay over the fact that, you know, batteries are getting better and better, you know, we're now seeing vehicles that are doing 300 miles on a single charge, you know, public charging infrastructures developing at pace. I think from a true car perspective, then yes, I personally don't see any other real reason for somebody not to jump in an EV.
So let's expand that question slightly and go into Paul's area of expertise. Paul, go on, you pose the question.
Well, I was going to say, well, I mean, I understand why the jury might be slightly a little bit out on why, you know, a car's there or not, because, you know, momentum has to be kept up, right? And we need to make sure that that happens. But I think, to your point, pricing, benefit in kind, staying in place for a few more years, exactly. Other bits and pieces. But when you're talking to your fleets and customers, and I know that you guys run a few vans yourselves across your business, what is the feeling and thought around the van world? Is it the same? Are we done? By the way, I know the answer, so you better be right.
I feel like I can't answer this to you, Paul. I'll give it my best shot. So I think vans are harder, if I'm being honest. We see a lot of our customers operate van fleets. And for those customers, it's all about choosing the right vehicles for the right jobs. Of course, if you've got a vehicle that has to be in use, you know, 15 hours a day, and they're going to be doing, you know, 500-600 miles, whatever it might be, that poses a challenge. I think to draw another parallel, I think vans get used for more than cars. You know, some vans are required to carry equipment or carry weight. We've got some fantastic customers in the utilities industry, and they're required to run refrigerated vehicles to test water samples. And all of those different things pose slightly different challenges. I wouldn't say they're impossible. Big shout out to SES Water, who did electrify that van that required refrigeration in the back. But for me, it's all about making sure you don't go too quickly and choosing the right van for the right application. They do necessarily have lower ranges than some of the vehicles. So yes, I would say, Paul, on my kind of not so educated answer to you, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting there.
You've nailed it, Adam. You've nailed it. I agree. It is right vehicle for the right job. And we can't go as fast, but that's why the mandate is slightly different. In terms of lower numbers in the short term and sort of getting up to higher numbers by 2030. So, and what is the biggest challenge? Because you've mentioned use case.
Yeah.
And I think use case is critical, right? The refrigerated, the journeys, the towing, all of the different elements, all of which can be handled to greater or lesser extents, but not everything can be handled. And we need to focus in on the things that we can do and accept that there are elements that we can't. But what are the other challenges that businesses are coming up with to say, this is actually really difficult for us? We are 100% behind this. We want to do this. What is the challenge? Not the vehicle necessarily, because, we recognize that vehicles have their issues, but what are the other challenges that businesses are citing?
I think probably the biggest challenge we're seeing at the moment is quite often we're looking to make these decisions without really speaking to the drivers. And actually, when you consider it's a real change management process where at the end of the day, there's going to be a man or a woman sat in a van wanting to do their job. I think the worst thing we've seen customers do is literally grab an electric vehicle and throw it to the driver and let them get on with it and effectively think that it's just the same as driving a diesel or petrol vehicle. So for us at Drax, I think it's really understanding that it's an end-to-end change management process, but actually at the heart of that is the driver. So, we found if you educate the driver, you really get them bought into what you're trying to do. They become massive advocates for the transition, and then we see a real snowball effect throughout that organization.
Adam, if we were together, I'd be high-fiving you right now. The driver is absolutely critical and is so important. I love the drivers of our van world. They are doing such an incredible job, and it is so challenging, and we forget them at our peril. John?
And I think what has helped embed all of that, Paul and Adam, is the EV rally. And you mentioned that earlier, that Drax had a team in the EV rally 2024, and we always knew you were coming, because the tunes were on, the sweeties were handed out, and you all had massive smiles on your faces. Is driver behaviour something which you can almost teach people, that you can help educate and take away the fears? And then you get to a point where everybody goes, yeah, I get this now. And this is so much more fun. And, we shouldn't have fun driving, but you do.
Yeah, I think it's a really good observation. We are a smiley team. I'd say I think that's been told to us before, but I think a lot of that comes from being surrounded by people who are hugely passionate about what we're trying to do here in the UK. From a driver education piece, I think it's all about actually being honest with them. And, the last thing they want is for somebody to come and sit by them and just say, EVs are the future. You just need to get on board with that, jump in, drive it away. We actually spend, for our largest customers, we actually do driver workshops where we'll sit down with the drivers to talk through some of the myths that they might have heard of in the market. Can you take an electric vehicle through the car wash? Which, believe it or not, was a question, we received. I think so. I mean, I've done it.
You obviously don't take yours through, Paul.
No, of course I do. I was just, but a lot of people, but you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people, even listening, might think, well, hang on, water and electric doesn't go very well together. But what I loved was seeing a little video clip. I think it might have been on Instagram or something with the floods in Dubai. I mean, I've got floods here in Bedford, actually, where the road is closed and it's still closed because there's millions of litres of water actually in the road. But it was in Dubai, and the water was about 3 feet deep, and the only vehicle that could go through it was a Tesla. Yeah. It just kind of sailed through, creating a sort of bow wave just above, about halfway up the windscreen. Goodness knows how much water ended up inside the vehicle, but hey, it was great. But anyway, sorry. Workshops, myth-busting, back to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, I think it's exactly those kind of things that we talk to people about, and it's just being honest with them. And things like talking to them about, you know, how you maximise range within the vehicle, you know, things to think about when you're going out to charge on the roads, and just treating them as the people who are actually making money for the business. Right? These people in the vans tend to be the people that are actually creating value for the UK economy. Mm-hmm. So I think sitting down with them, understanding their concerns, talking them through it, actually letting them test an electric vehicle with you sat beside them, it's just a really powerful way to build a relationship and build advocacy through the driver base.
John, I tell you, this guy knows his beans. He's got it absolutely smack on. The drivers drive the value, and businesses need to remember this. Well done.
I guess this is why accountants end up running businesses, because you have to have, as a person, you have to have that hard-nosed, where's the data coming from that supports all the things that I do. But what's really interesting about you, Adam, is that you have a way of delivering it, a personality which shines through and makes that data live. Has that always been your style? Have you always been somebody who's been able to entertain the class, be the live wire when there's a social gathering? Or is this something you've perfected over time?
Well, thank you, John. That's very, very kind of you. I think I would probably say the honest answer to that is I've been told several times that I'm not an atypical accountant. probably why I am.
In a complimentary way, yes. Well,
I'm not even sure it was complimentary. But I think I've always had an interest in how businesses work. And yes, you know, I would never change training to be an accountant. You know, for every aspiring accountant out there, which I'm sure there's thousands, it is a fantastic way to learn about businesses and how they operate. But yeah, people have always been one I like. I like getting out. I like talking to people. I like building relationships. But yeah, I think the skills go kind of hand in hand.
Yeah. Have there been difficult times in your life? Because we've spoken about lots of stuff that's happening and it's future and great and everything's wonderful in the world. There must have been times, though, in your career where things have been a bit tough and you've thought, do you know what? I'm going to have to dig deep here. Can you tell us about one of those times?
Yeah, of course. I think probably the best example of that was actually, as I mentioned, the pandemic and, you know, the requirement for us all to go and work from home. Not many people know this, but that actually corresponded with the time that we actually made the decision to move our electric vehicles product from an incubation activity into a retail business activity. Mm-hmm. So being faced with the daunting task of building a brand new team in a brand new entity whilst we were all sat at home was pretty terrifying. As I've already mentioned, I like people. I like getting out and meeting them, and having to interview people over Teams and, you know, online, I found very, very difficult. So that for me was a real challenge. As I've said, customers started to re-strategize and move away from decarbonization for a short period, completely understandably, sending people home to work from home whilst growing the team. I've got to say, if there was ever a time to start a new business, that's not it.
So many did, didn't they? This is really interesting. We talk often to Toddington at GridServe, who says exactly the same thing. It was the worst possible time. But from that came people were more creative, more up for a challenge, more broad in their thinking, which enabled them to deliver new value that previously we wouldn't have done.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think, you know, there's some fantastic pioneers out in the market, you know, that I've got a huge amount of respect for, whether that's, you know, Power, for example, or what Mina have done with All Star. So yes, I think it did foster innovation and it fostered some great business stories. Would I choose to do it like that again? Probably not.
But Adam, it fostered the EV Cafe. We wouldn't be here. We would not be here had it not been for the pandemic. It wouldn't have brought five of us that are dotted around the whole country, together to go online and to do this kind of thing, which we feel immensely privileged about. And quite honestly, I guess it wasn't a courageous decision. Mm. It was just a reaction. Mm. And we didn't set out to create a business, but it happened. And it did seem like an incubation, to use a word that you use not relevant to this, but a sort of an incubation of something that has gone on to be whatever it is today, and which is quite fun. You mentioned courage in your journey, and it seems to be a trait, and obviously to continue to bring out the business, Jack's Electric Vehicles, out of incubation in that period was a courageous one, and obviously you taking responsibility for heading that up and then ultimately becoming a director of this energy service brand as well. Talk to me about courage. Where does that come from in you? Because obviously you're making decisions constantly that are difficult, sometimes challenging, and you are building, you know, a business unit within a really strong and powerful business. What is it that's given you that courage within you?
Oh, that's a great question. I think some of that is to do with the colleagues that I work with every day. You know, I feel incredibly privileged to work alongside a senior leadership team at Drax who are so supportive in what we do. And ironically, I think a lot of people see Drax as this, you know, huge organization. And, you know, whilst we are big, you know, we're FTSE 250 listed, we're actually quite small and we're quite agile. And for me, having my colleagues around me that support my decision making, you know, don't kick you too hard when you make a mistake, I think has been really powerful. And, you know, generating that culture, I think a lot of it, it's a really cliched response, right? But a lot of people talk about how do you fail fast? And you only fail fast if you're not going to get a kick in when you fail. So culturally here at Drax, I think we've got a really good way of working with each other. And actually, I do quite a bit of reading. I really admire, I don't know if you know, Ben Francis, who's the founder and chief exec of Gymshark. Not a massive
heard
gym.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive gym goer myself, but he's a young man. You know, he's a billionaire, so what's not to admire? But he talks about having a really strange policy of constantly making himself redundant. This is what he talks about. It's, you know, how do you consistently hire people who are better at doing their job than you are? And for me, that desire to build a business built with the best people, regardless of the personal cost, is, I mean, there's no better definition of courage, right? And that's something I try to create at Drax. But, you know, that's a lot easier said than done, I'd say.
Love it. It just, it feels so natural with you, Adam. And it seems that, you know, you're willing to learn from the people around you, which I think is critical, right? You've referred to people, you know, time and time again throughout this podcast. And I think, you know, coming from a rugby background, I'm guessing, you know, as you grew up, it's very team, isn't it? It's very tight knit, and, you know, you back each other up on the pitch and, you know, and on often off the pitch as well. It's good that you're able to take in that inspiration from outside. And you've mentioned, that young man. Is there anybody else that's been a real inspiration for you that stands out? Or is it just that sort of collective?
Yeah, it's interesting you pick it up, really. I mean, not necessarily an individual person, but I think, you know, my very first mentor that I actually had at Drax told me to be a magpie. She was the operations director, you know, someone I have a huge amount of respect for. And she said, every single person you talk to gives you an opportunity to learn, take things that you like, and then develop your own style. And I love that notion that we're always learning off people. You know, we develop relationships and we always see things that we admire or we like. you know, and how you take snippets like a magpie to really then build your own personality at work, I think is really important. So not necessarily an individual person, but I think I work with some of the most inspiring people in the industry, you know, and getting to get out and talk to, you know, the likes of you, the EV Cafe, other businesses on the same journey.
Stop it.
I had to plug you somewhere, John.
No, don't stop it.
But let's pick up on that, Adam. Let's pick up on that. So what nugget have you collected that you would pass on to the people who are listening to this as your gift to them?
Okay, I'm gonna steal something. And this is something I'm really passionate about at the moment, which is...
like a magpie.
Yeah, like a magpie, yeah. Which is all about decision-making, right? So decision-making at a business like Drax, you know, is an interesting beast of a subject. But actually, there's something that Apple introduced many years ago, which was this concept of type one and type two decision-making. Mm-hmm. And effectively, they think of decision-making as a door. So a type one decision is a door that you can walk through. If you don't like what you've done, you get to the other side, you simply just walk back through it. So they're your everyday decisions. You know, they should be made very quickly in a really agile way, talking to only the few people that need to make the decision. And then you've got the type two decisions, and they're big, right? They're, you walk through the door and the door slams behind you and there's no going back, you know, investing 10 million quid in a software solution, for example. And those decisions take time. They require thought. They require consultation with various parts of the business, and naturally they are slower. And what Apple were finding is that as businesses grow and they get bigger, there's a real tendency to put every decision behind door two. And we certainly see some of that at Drax, and we saw a slight slowdown in how we were being agile to customer needs and wants. So yeah, for me, big thing to learn is be conscious of your type one decisions and put as much through that door as you can. Because what's the worst that can happen, right?
Adam, I can't tell you how valuable that is to our decision-making process at the EV Cafe. And it's something we are very guilty as a small business of making those type two, door two decisions where, you know, everybody's involved all the time and we discuss everything at great detail because we don't want to fail. When actually, I think fail fast is a really good example of something that we should do, as well as those door one decisions. Paul, Adam has earned his corn, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to be playing this on loop. No, but it is so important, and it's such an encouragement to know that there are so many lessons out there from things that we've kind of not quite got right. And I think these are our biggest learning experiences, aren't they? The things that we don't get right, and, you know, talking about those challenges that you've experienced and all of those kinds of things. And one of the things that we like to do toward the end of a podcast is to consider what wish you would like to exercise. I'm going to hand you a magic wand. This is a pen, for those of you looking. This is a pen, not a magic wand. But
do
I will
you have
hand
a wand?
Said wand. I should get one, shouldn't I?
We
should
imagine you
a
would.
A little star on there.
Like a fairy.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, you can...
pair of wings as well.
Oh, I mean, listen, I've got them tucked under my hoodie. Anyway, enough nonsense. Oh, there's never enough nonsense, is there? Anyway, but yeah, so magic wand handed to you, Adam. What sort of obstacle, what difficulty would you address, or what industry thing would you address? You can't use it for your own good.
Okay.
You can't get a pay rise or anything like that, but, you know, what would you do?
Oh, good question. I think probably if I took your magic pen, I'd probably do something to remove the anti-EV rhetoric that we see every day in the national press. It really gets to me. And I think as an industry, although we do a lot, I think we've got to work even harder to really help balance the debate on electric vehicles and, you know, dispel some of the myths that are so freely printed in our everyday press. So I think I've already mentioned, you know, public perception has such a major impact on the behaviour of people and businesses. And I think some of the hesitation that we've seen in the market in 24 can probably be attributed to that negative press agenda we've seen. Magic wand, I think as an industry, we are collectively doing some absolutely fantastic things. So let's shout about them more widely.
Oh, see, I like the way you changed your tack there. Sort of it wasn't so much the anti-rhetoric, but more the celebrate the good. And I like that. I like, because really that's what the EV Cafe has grown up trying to do. You mentioned Mina. You mentioned there was another business that struck me, John. I forget Power. Which one it was. But Power. Both probably less so with Power, but Mina certainly, we were very early talking to those guys, Ash and Chris, about their business and celebrating it. Another company called EV Blocks and others that have just kind of sprung up. And we love to celebrate what great people are doing, much like what you guys are doing at Drax. And many of our other partners are doing wonderful things. And I like that. So we're going to take some of that magic wandness for ourselves, if you don't mind. There we go. We'll take some of that. But the industry widely, it would be great to see it celebrate, but also go, John.
Paul, there was, excuse me, one other element which I think was really key. Adam spoke about the negative and people being quite challenging. He then spoke about the opportunity to give more information. But he finished off with, let's have a chat about it. And I think that underlines for me the way that Adam goes about his business. It's not somebody else's responsibility. Mm. This is something I can affect and I'm going to. Mm. And I really, really like that.
Yeah, thank you, John. I think that's very true.
So, I mean, listen, it's been really interesting. And I can see why this Drax Energy Services and electric vehicles is going to be successful, because with you leading and playing such an important role within this business, so connected with the people around you, so connected with the challenge and really living out the experience, it's clear to me that this can only end in success. And particularly, you really understand the challenges around vans, because it is a challenging area. It is one of the difficult obstacles. But if we can address that, I think that the car thing, that carries on, right?
Yeah.
And then we move into trucks, which is, again, equally challenging. But getting the van piece is obviously very close to my heart, as John knows. So, John, any final questions for Adam?
Just, I think what strikes me, I don't have a question as such, but I think what strikes me about Adam is his approachability. And I would urge anybody who's uncertain about making the transition to electric vehicles to reach out to Adam and the team at Drax Electric Vehicles, because very clearly they understand the marketplace, they understand what they're trying to achieve and how they're going to do it. And there's a massive amount of integrity there. Which you speak to with every word that you utter. So all I can say, Adam, is thank you so, so much, because this has been really helpful in positioning Drax as a trusted friend.
Yeah, thank you, John. I've been quite apprehensive about it, but I've actually really enjoyed it. So thank you both for being so kind. It's been really good.
Well, Adam, you don't need to be, because you come across brilliantly. Is there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with from today?
No, I don't think so. I think John's summed it up perfectly. I think, you know, I'm the face of Drax EV today, but actually behind me is, like I said, some of the most passionate, brilliant people within the market. So at our heart, we are EV nerds. We are EV advocates. We love what we do. So, you know, please come and talk to us. Come and have a chat with us. Learn a little bit more about what we do. And we'd be delighted to speak to you.
Fantastic. What a brilliant way to end, with an open invitation to come and talk to some people that really know their stuff and can really help you wherever you are on your journey to this zero emission world. And we didn't really go into the detail of it, but it is something that is written into law, that it's, you know, that the tests are coming, and, you know, sustainability and driving down zero, you know, towards zero emission and net zero ultimately is all mandated. So we need help. The industry is huge. There's so many millions of vehicles on the road and they all need some help. So Drax are able to do that, and with Adam at the helm, is a very exciting opportunity to be able to come and talk to them. So, Adam, thank you so much. John, thank you as always. And for those of you that have been listening, thank you for coming on the journey with us with Adam today of Drax Energy Services and Vehicle Solutions. And please do check them out. There'll be links to their business in the bio for this podcast. And of course, you can check out all of the other people that we've spoken to on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. Head over to evcafe.org or follow our LinkedIn page where we post these every Wednesday morning. So thanks ever so much for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful day.